We do not have a quorum to officially start the meeting yet, but I think since it's already 8 minutes past our usual start time, Representative Beard, if you could, I guess, update us on your bill.
Sure.
You already moved this bill, so if you'd like to renew your motion to renew it,
Madam
I would accept
Chair,
that.
Members, I will. House Bill 389, I think we amended it and then laid it on the table, and so I'll move that, take it off the table, recommend pass, and refer to the General Register. And Madam Chair, I do have a DE1 amendment. If you can speak to the process of amending the bill.
We do have a quorum now.
Right.
So the Government Operations and Elections Committee can officially come to order tonight, and you will have to actually move that. I forgot you'll have to move it after now that it's already called to order, but
okay.
Since I've still got the gavel. Representative Scalzi, did you have time to look at the minutes?
Very thoroughly, and I move to approve.
Representative Scalzi moves to approve the minutes of Tuesday, February 21st. Are there any changes or corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor of the approval of the minutes of Tuesday, February 21st, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Okay, now I will have you restate your motion, Representative Beard.
Madam Chair, I move that House Bill 389 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register.
So moved. And then did you want to start? I see you have a second
Chair,
delete everything amendment. Did you want to move that?
I have a second amendment, and just to be clear on the process, we did amend the bill last time. This will amend the bill again, but we're amending the original bill, I believe. Is that right? Maybe Mr. Shepherd can help me understand that.
It's unengrossed, so I believe we can just amend the bill, and it'll just replace
you.
So I think the proper motion would just to move the DE1 amendment, and since this is a delete everything and it's the shape that you want to get it in,
yes.
My preference would be to just vote on the amendment, and then
I'll explain what we do.
Then we'll vote. That's all right with everyone. Okay. All those in favor of approval of the DE1 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Now the bill is in the shape you'd like, and if you could just explain the changes to us.
I will. Madam Chair and members, thank you for the indulgence of laying the bill over here 2 weeks ago. As we mentioned when we did that, we were doing committee work, and my assurance to the committee was that in the interim, no pun intended, we would be meeting with folks who had interests and concerns about the bill, and we would make an amendment or create an amendment if we could reach some consensus that seemed to be a happy occurrence to everyone concerned, as much as we possibly could. So, Madam Chair, we have the DE1 amendment for you. I'm going to explain that, but before I do, I like to give a hat tip or kudos where they're deserved or where I think they belong. And so I want to say thank you to Kent and to Annalie and to Keith from the townships, the small cities, and the counties for being so gracious and accommodating, forceful in stating their positions and their concerns, to Mr. Coyle for hearing them, and the Builders Association of the Twin Cities. I think the DE1 amendment that we just voted on here to put the bill in the shape I'd like to present, I think that is the work, I think, of of good people, of goodwill, who put their best into it, and I just want to say thank you for doing that. Just a moment, I might have missed one. Patrick from the League of Cities, Minnesota Cities, was also involved in this, and I'm sorry I forgot to give him a pat on the back as well. Members, where the bill changed in the DE1 amendment is on page 3, roughly lines 3.18 to 3.23. And what was added there was a number 3 on line 3.21, an application which the governing body adopts an interim ordinance within 30 days, of its first meeting following the application. Madam Chair, perhaps I can pause here just a moment for an author's amendment, because at the request of the townships on line 3.22, Mr. Shepherd, where it says 30 days of, they requested that we change of to following. And on line 4.7, the same thing. This portion of amendment is duplicated on that line also. Of should be following. Madam Chair, that's an author's amendment I'd wish to make this time.
Thank you. Mr. Shepherd, could you report that amendment and let us know if that is the accurate language?
Yes, Madam Chair and members, Representative Beard's amendment in the two places that he mentioned, line 3.22, and line 4.7 of his DE1 amendment would replace the word of with following, so that in both places it would refer to an interim ordinance within 30 days following its first meeting.
Are there any questions to the author's oral amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the oral amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Amendment does prevail.
Thank you, members, for that housekeeping item. That helps. I appreciate it. That change is there. And the gist of the light changes on line 3.2, 1, 2, 2, and 2, 3 is that when an application comes forward and is accepted as a complete application, we've come off of our original position that applications that came in under the rules cannot have a moratorium affecting them. This is a yield on our position on from the original bill that says that after it comes in, the townships, counties, cities have 30 days following the receipt and the meeting to actually implement an interim ordinance that could have the effect of putting on a moratorium, including that particular project that's causing the angst and concern. That language is duplicated again on page 4, lines 4.5 to 4.8. That again is part of the compromise that was reached after great discussion. And then back on page line 7.14, when it comes to determining the value of land or property for park dedication fees, on line 7.14, the words "for land in the same or similar land use category" were added to help give further clarification to where the evaluation is going to be made. And Madam Chair and members, that is the substantive changes to the DE amendment that makes the bill, I think, a good bill, even better. And to stand for questions, if you have any, I have Mr. Peter Coyle with me.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair. Not awake yet this morning, I guess. Question, what does the repealer do? And maybe Mr. Shepherd can, or Ms. Dyson can help with that. What does the repealer on line 18 do?
Ms. Dyson?
Madam Chair, Representative Nelson, that I believe is the subdivision regulation that relates to the park dedication fees for municipalities, and it's mostly recodified in the bill in Section 7 with the changes that the author has to the park dedication, but because they're separating out the dedication for infrastructure from the park dedication, it ended up with a lot of it being recodified. So the repealer repeals the old language.
Thank you. Madam Chair, one other question I have.
Representative Nelson?
For a comment. And I spoke with Representative Beard about this beforehand. I am one of the co-authors on this bill and have been getting quite a few emails about this. And the majority of the ones, we have exceptions here for the interim ordinances for adult businesses and nuisances, but the biggest complaint I'm getting from mostly outstate people is has to do with feedlots and that such. And I spoke with Representative Beard about this, and I'm not going to bring an amendment forth today on this, but going forward, I think that if that was some language was put in there about exempting feedlots, I think that would help some of the townships that are the people from townships that are complaining to me. And that's just a comment in my mind.
Noted.
Other questions at this time? Representative, or Mr. Coyle, did you want to speak?
Not unless there's questions.
Okay. I think there's probably a few people that want to speak. Okay. Now, we did take testimony beforehand, so if we'll start with people who have not testified, and then if other folks want to provide 30 seconds or a minute of testimony if they've already testified, that'd be all right. Is it Gunther? Gunther Mosler? If you just approach the table, and before you begin, if you could just identify yourself for the record, that'd be greatly appreciated.
Madam Chair, my name is Gunther Mosler, and I represent the Randolph Township Planning and Zoning Commission. We're located in the south edge of Dakota County. Thank you for allowing the testimony on this issue. I'm here today to present to you concerns regarding this House File 389. If it's passed, it would take away the right to enact an interim ordinance, and that is based on townships only meet once a month, depending when they receive the request from a developer, in order to get proper timing for public meetings and so forth. 30 days is definitely adequate. That would probably hold true for small cities also that meet only once a month. Every local government unit should have their right for reasonable time review and unanticipated proposals for any major development not covered under existing ordinance. Randolph Township ordinance is intended to protect the property rights of every resident and landowner equally, and by placing a minimum restrictions necessary to ensure that the development will be compatible with existing structures, land uses, and will not be detrimental to any health, safety, convenience, general welfare, or affect any property values of another resident or landowner. The proposed legislation that you have here is, even in the modified form, was discussed last night at the Township Board meeting. And the Planning Zoning Commission was part of that meeting. It was unanimously agreed that the elected Township Board members are more aware of what's going on in their townships than probably most people that are sitting around this group or in the state capitol, unless you're serving on one of the townships, cities, or county offices. So based on that discussion last night, we should make sure that we have every resident in the township be informed of any public notices and meetings of unanticipated proposals and be able to voice their input. The Randolph Township Board and the Planning Commission approved this testimony last night and requested that the legislation not be passed unless given adequate time and for review of any project. Any questions?
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you very much, and I really appreciated your testimony. So you said that you prefer it not be passed, and I agree with you. Do you prefer this bill, or do you prefer existing law, the status quo?
Mr. Mosler?
The existing laws for the township you're talking about?
Correct, in terms of, you know, the whole interim ordinance.
There's, you know, obviously we have statutes for state, county, and city or townships for various things, and each takes a certain amount of time to do properly. To rush into something is foolish, because we've seen some of that happen, and then the township, in our case, was stuck with the bill when the developer pulled out and left nothing to cover their expenses that they incurred. Township ended up with.
Thank you.
Representative Beard.
Madam Chair, I'd like to respond a little bit to the comments that were just made, because the if you read the amendment that was just adopted, part of the accommodation that was reached was to accommodate monthly meetings around the state. I mean, here in the metro, we're used to meetings every week and so on and so forth. But to be clear, the way the amendment changed the rule that we're proposing, once the application hits the desk, they have 15 days to review that application. I'm sure that anybody in the county or the township would know when an application of any unusual character hit the desk. They have 15 days to review it. Then they can bring it up at their regular meeting and talk about the application. After that, they have another 30 days to decide whether or not they want to have an interim ordinance or not. So we're up to a maximum of 75 days the way this lays. It could be 45 to 50, but it could be as much as 75 days. I think that in this day and age, that is plenty of time to actually notice everybody and decide whether or not they want to put an interim ordinance in place. We're still then protecting people who've invested in trying to do something in a community, but we're also giving the community now better than 2 months to actually react to an application once it hits the desk. I just wanted to be clear that good folks worked well, stated their concerns, and this is the amendment that you just adopted in the DE1 version.
Thank you. Representative Plum?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is it Mr. Gunther?
Gunther.
Gunther.
Yep.
My concern is, and I've talked with many township people, is that when someone goes to the MPCA or the DNR, you know, someone at the state level for permitting on a major project, that townships don't seem to be informed in a timely manner, that, you know, possibly cities and counties, but then I've had people say that the county, if they're inclined, they'll let the township know. Do you have any comments or background on the issue of notification from state agencies to all local entities such as townships?
Mr. Mogler?
Good question. Thank you. The township we're in is about half the size of a normal township, but it does have development industrial park. It's got residential around Lake Billsby. It has commercial along Highway 52, and we're controlled by a number of agencies. You got the DNR, you have the MPCA, you have the Highway Department, and you have the Dakota County, and on it goes. Even Federal Energy Regulatory has some input because there's a generating plant on the end of the lake reservoir. Communications is a big problem, and always has been, because you have too many agencies involved and everybody assumes somebody else knows about it. And invariably, you'll find that the township is the last to find out until somebody drops off a package and says, here's what I want to do. And I think in most cases, when you have any kind of development, there's generally some homework to be done ahead of time to make sure you can get the proper licensing and you meet the statutes. And I think on behalf of a developer, I would think a courtesy call to the township for some overview of what their intentions are would be worthwhile, because then it would be able to meet some of the timelines that are involved here. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're looking for. Okay.
Is there anyone else who has not testified to this bill that would like an opportunity to testify?
Thank you.
Come on down. And then before you start, if you could just identify yourself for the tape. could one right at the table. Maybe Mr. Mosler, could you allow the next witness?
Good morning. My name is Deborah Ewells. I live in Jordan, Minnesota, Scott County. I have concern. Property owners are one of the basic rights, as we all know. And no property owner will be secure if we remove their chance to become informed and participate in the conversation with elected officials. No one knows how a project will affect their property, or no one knows the specifics about one property owner, and only that property owner can present that information for consideration in the decision-making process. And they need the opportunity to be informed and to bring the conversation forward. Please do not threaten neighboring property owners' security without allowing them the time with each new project to become informed and participate in the process. We must be allowed to have the conversation in an informed manner. The outputs of new projects may or may not affect property rights of neighbors. Each case is unique and must be studied. No landowner is secure if anyone can come in with a new project which may destroy their use of property. So in my experience, the current system is already a very tight time frame. The communication takes a while to happen. A developer puts an application in, the staff receives it, they have to process it. And then if they decide they're having a public hearing, they have to notify the property owners. So by the time the property owners find out, They have a limited time before the public hearing to become informed. And in cities, for example, it goes before the Planning Commission. Oftentimes, the Planning Commission may not know about it until they receive their packet for that particular meeting. So they have limited time to be informed before the first meeting. And then the Planning Commission needs to hear from the public. They need to consider the information and to then present their recommendation to the city councils. And the city councils need time to consider it. And the residents need time to be able to address the Planning Commission and the city council and have the conversation so that the best result can be had for everyone. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Anyone else that needs to testify that hasn't testified before? There are a few people that did testify last time, but since the bill has changed, since they testified, wanted to just have a little bit of time to address us. Bobby King, the Land Stewardship Project. Welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Bobby King. I represent the Land Stewardship Project, and my comments are going to be focused on the current bill. So we're still concerned and opposed to the bill in its current form because we believe local units of government need to be fully empowered to react when something anticipated and potentially harmful is proposed in their community. And we think that this new language curtails that ability too dramatically. The first thing, the 30-day clock. So a permit comes in, it's accepted. The next public meeting, a 30-day clock starts. And I've met with Mr. Clore from the builders, and we've talked this through, and I've expressed my concerns to him that that all that's happening off the public radar. A permit can be deemed complete on a Tuesday, on a Thursday or a Wednesday. County commissioners meet on a Tuesday. That item won't be on the agenda. The county commissioners might not even know about it. And a 30-day clock starts. So our concern is that any clock that starts needs to be, number one, long enough, and number two, it needs to start after the public is aware of what's being proposed. Under this proposal, I think that it could often happen that the 30-day clock has almost run out or expired before neighbors to a project are aware through a public hearing. That it would be required for many projects through a conditional use permit or other type of public hearing. So that's our concern with that element of it. Another large concern is the two-thirds majority. For counties, that's effectively 4 out of 5, that's 80%. That really unnecessarily ties the hands and makes effective government way too difficult. And I think an unintended consequence of that will be the county. So Winona County just adopted a moratorium related to sand frack mining, 3 to 2. So what that meant is the concerned townships didn't have to do that. I think under this proposal, we're going to see a lot more townships doing it because with 3 township officers, it's basically still the same. So I think that's a problem. I think that's misguided. The other thing that hasn't been addressed yet, and it's in the original bill in this proposal, is striking the ability of counties to extend the moratorium for another year. Some issues are simple. Some aren't. The sand frack mining issue in Goodhue County, they've launched into the issue aggressively. They've hired consultants to inform them, but they're already nervous that they can't be fully informed, create and implement zoning within this year time frame. Then the last issue is the public notice. And sometimes, especially when a township becomes aware of a project at the last minute, things have to be done quickly in order to work. And this is kind of an emergency power for things that aren't anticipated. And I think that public notice will be a problem in some cases. But overall, I think the problem with the concept in the bill is that it's overly broad. It applies to 1,700 plus townships, 87 counties, and 800 plus cities, and all types of projects. And I don't feel that testimony has been put on the table to warrant such a broad approach. That's our last concern. And I guess I wouldn't consider this a compromise, I mean this respectfully, and we want to keep working on it, but I would say this makes a bad bill not as bad. And, you know, LSP still opposes it, Farmers Union still opposes it, Minnesota Environmental Partnership still opposes it. In fact, no group that opposed it supports it now. They've just agreed not to oppose it. So in terms of getting to a compromise, I feel strong and more work is needed.
Thank you. Representative Hornstein has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. King. Could you just briefly amplify, you know, one that you were making some, I think, important points about public notice and, you know, with this clock ticking, you know, earlier, how, in your view, does this affect the ability to reach the public and to get them involved in time to, you know, deal with these interim ordinances and moratoriums?
Mr. King.
Madam Chair, Representative Hornstein, I know Kristen Idy Tollefson is here, and she has an exact timeline for Goodhue County, but this bill, if passed as is, will definitely result in folks becoming aware of that something large and unexpected is happening in their community with little or no time to enact an interim ordinance to address it. So, and that's, again, because the clock, all the actions that start the clock ticking are administrative, internal, that require no public notice.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Scalzi.
Just have a little question. The definition of the word a complete application is pending on line 3.17. What do we mean by a complete application? And I do share the two-thirds vote, because a two-thirds vote on a five-member board is really four-fifths. You know, that's the only time that math is funny. So, but what does a complete application mean? And I would like to hear as well from League of Minnesota Cities whether they're just sort of worked on it, or sort of opposed, or sort of in favor. I'm not sure. I'd like to hear from them after Mr. King.
Mr. King?
Madam Chair, Representative Scalzi, I'm not up on all the details of this, because it doesn't fall within the work I usually do, but when an application is submitted, the local unit of government has some time to deem it complete and then move forward, and the 60-day clock starts regarding issuing permits, or they have to return it and say, and this information is missing. I will say, too, we've suggested as a compromise that the clock start ticking the date of the first public hearing, and then it'd be 90 days. So what I've heard articulated is what the Twin Cities builders and developers want is a bright line at which they know now we could move forward. And I don't think we're opposed to that concept. We just want that bright line to not come so soon in the process that citizens and local officials become disenfranchised.
Representative Scalzi.
And the reason for my question about complete, and thank you for that testimony, is that, you know, in a city, it's got to go through the Planning Commission. So there's quite a few timelines that happen with notices, and the Planning Commission doesn't meet very often. A city council may meet more often, but the Planning Commission has to meet. Am I to understand then that, and maybe Representative Beard would answer this, a complete application means that it's met with the planning staff but not the Planning Commission?
Right. Representative Beard.
Madam Chair, yes, and I'm given to understand, and if we need to, we have Mr. Coyle or someone speak to it. Once the application is complete, and until the county, if it's a county that's dealing with it or a city, deems it complete, it's not complete. But once they've dotted the I's, crossed the T's, and met the ordinances that exist, including the land use plans and the zoning ordinances, that are all there for everybody to see, they're all there, they're playing by the rules, in other words, then it is an accepted application. And I think every county in this state has a planning commission. If the cities do, I think every county does as well, and this is where we may want verification. Once that happens, then it goes through the regular process of the planning commission before it goes to the county board. That's the point where it's also determined whether or not it triggers an environmental assessment worksheet and so on and so forth. Once all the information has been gathered by the applicant and submitted and deemed complete, it triggers several other things that happen. Nothing is happening in the dark here, folks. And this is part of my, if I, you sense just a little degree of irritation, it's the continual insistence that somehow we're trying to sneak something past someone. Not the case at all. All this is doing is pulling back the moratorium that can run for up to 2 years under existing law back to 1 year for people who agree to play by the rules and run through the application process. Nothing's changed in that regard. But thank you for the question, Representative Scalzi. It's a good one. Help shed light.
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you for that yes. clarification. But there's more changes in here than just taking out the 1 year renewal. There's quite a few changes. especially on line 3.16, it says an interim ordinance or a map must not halt, delay, or impede consideration. So does consideration imply that there's some, there's just sort of an approval? The word consideration is a little troubling. That's new, so that's why I'm questioning.
Representative Beard.
Madam Chair, Representative Spelzi, and members, consideration there refers to the people who are responsible for considering the application, meaning the process we just spoke about. What had been happening, remember the story about the industrial landowner in St. Paul who pulled an application to build a shed and all of a sudden had city council tell staff, no, stop, deny, we put a moratorium on. This is part of the troubling trend that we're trying to stop. Once they're in the process then for consideration of their application and the imposition of conditions for the use and so on and so forth has to run on the existing timeline. What we're trying to stop is people going, oh my, this is a big deal, we don't understand it, and then throw a one-year moratorium on, then extend it for another year, and so on and so forth. We have for 150 years developed a very careful process that keeps everybody, the applicant and the neighbors, in a balance here. Lately, in my opinion, there has become a little imbalance. We're just trying to move it back towards a balance point. The consideration is for those who are charged with processing the application. There was one other, well, it'll come back to me. There was one other point, question you asked that I had a response to. It'll come back to me.
Well, Representative Scalzi.
And I do have just one mm-hmm. little comment. Having served a long time on the city council, certainly a shed is one thing, but there's no way that a city could have thought that there'd be a big sand fracking operation or a big sand mining operation. Sure. There's no way that they could have thought of that. So for some people to say, and you haven't said this, but some folks have said, they should have thought of this before. Well, lots of local governments, they don't sit there and spend all their hours just thinking of the bad things that could possibly happen in their community. So things do come up that would impact local control, and this is certainly one of them, and which is why this has been brought forth, obviously. That seems obvious to me, and maybe there's other things, but, I mean, the little garage, the shed, that's a different thing. A big sand mining operation is very different and may take a lot of time and thought to protect the community as a whole.
Representative Beard.
Madam Chair, thank you, Representative Spelzi. People who sit around and think of all the bad things that could happen are called lawyers. Sorry, I just had to shoot that. The other issue is the compromise that was reached to allow the 30 days plus another 30 and still allow one-year moratorium is because we're realizing that what happens in an urban setting with somebody wanting to build a building on their property and what's happening in other places that might not be anticipated is something we probably should accommodate. Hence the amendment you've voted on here this morning. Thank you for the question.
Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Beard, the way I understand the bill, and I agree with Representative Scalzi, knew that it's difficult sometimes to see a lot of the negative things that could happen in the past and to try and stop them before they start. However, is it improper to say that if company wanted to do sand fracking and they put an application in, there's nothing that says the township or the county or the city has to accept that application, or is there? Is there any way that they could say, you know what, we're not sure about the unintended consequences of sand fracking without putting a moratorium in place at that point in time? Because the way I understand this is that process has been completed, they went through the time frame, and now you've got some instances where townships or cities or counties are kind of changing the rules in the middle of the game when it seems that they could take some steps up front if they truly don't understand the situation. Is that the case?
Representative Beard.
Madam Chair, thank you for the question. To be clear, and I know this is just a... let me say that you don't frack sand in Minnesota. You mine sand in Minnesota. The fracking takes place in Colorado, Wyoming, Pennsylvania, Texas, other places. We only mine sand here. A mine's a mine, pretty much, folks. Whether we're mining limestone or quarrying rock or we're mining sand, whatever the point is, that's not the issue. I think the issue is the size and scope is what I'm hearing of an operation like that. To be clear, the jurisdiction that's responsible for issuing the permits does have the ability to look at an application and say, this is not complete. However, they probably better do it within the confines and the direction and counsel of their ordinances that are on the books right now. There's a reason we publish law, is so every citizen knows the rules that we're playing by, and that's all we're asking for. I might add, too, once the application is considered, if it's a permitted process, it's probably a matter of just giving a permit. I would suggest that every county out there, though, probably issues conditional use permits just because we cannot anticipate every new thing that might come down the pike, including cell phone towers or lit-up billboards or massive turkey farms or whatever the issue is that we probably aren't contemplating, which is why we have conditional uses, so that they can run them through the planning commission process, talk about how it might be injurious to the neighbors, and how we can ameliorate the possible injury that might happen to your neighbors and to that adjacent property. That's why we do these things. And so, no, this is only to keep the to level that playing field and pull back the two-year moratorium, and basically, when people have been playing by the rules, we make sure that the rules and the process in place continue to move forward.
Madam Chair, could I comment on that briefly?
Mr. King, yes, and then we're going to move on to
there is a situation where the interim ordinance is the only avenue, and that's when a township has no zoning. Okay. The county and the township have been working well together, but then there's a difference about what's appropriate in that township. And their only course of action, if they want to be heard, would be an interim ordinance. Then during that interim ordinance, they would develop zoning. And going forward, they'd have other avenues.
Thank you. Representative Scalzi had requested that the League of Cities comment, and I won't force the cities to comment, but if you would like to approach for Representative Scalzi's request, I'd like that. And if you could just identify yourself for the tape.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Patrick Hines with the League of Minnesota Cities, and I think Representative Scalzi's question was our position on the bill. And as introduced, the League did not support the language, and at the request of Representative Beard, he asked us and other organizations, the Association of Counties and Townships, to work with the proponents of the bill to see if we could reach a compromise that we felt would be a workable system for our member cities. And the DE1 language in front of you is the result of that. We are fine with the current statute, but we feel that this process is a workable compromise, and we will, should it become law, go forward and educate our members and make sure they know how they'll have to proceed under the new law.
Thank you. And at this time, I'll call up Kristen Ide-Tollefson. I know you've testified before, but if you'd like to testify to the DE1 amendment in a few minutes, that would be great. And just remember to identify yourself.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Kristen Ide-Tollefson, and I'm from Florence Township, and I appreciate you allowing me back. And I'd like to contribute to this conversation by giving you a timeline of what's been going on down in Goodhue County so that you can see how this is playing out in a specific situation. First, I want to emphasize the point that was made by the previous testifier, that the limitations that townships have when they are trying to process issues that are coming up. Most townships are very thrifty and conservative. We don't have sheriffs. Few have planning commissions. Even fewer have comprehensive plans, and we don't have planning staff. We don't have staff of any kind. In Florence Township, our annual expenditure on our government, you know, on our is $10,000 just for our commissions and officials. We have few resources for enforcements or lawsuits of any kind. We rarely hire consultants, and when a big issue arises, a township depends upon the active involvement of our citizenry to defend their own interests, the property rights, their property rights. And so that's why it's so critical that that citizens be able to weigh in. In Florence Township in Goodhue County, when Hay Creek Township residents discovered that there was going to be a mining proposal in March of 2011, they started educating themselves, publicizing. In April, a group now calling themselves Save the Bluffs held an informational public meeting in the Red Wing Library, which was attended by over 150 people, and had speakers to tell the citizens how the process was going to proceed. By May, they were researching the essential steps of gathering more information. Now, this is really, I think, a major key point that has been discussed here today, that information for local governments is the key to any kind of negotiation or proper, proper going forward on proposals. And if a local government or citizens don't have time or a vehicle to gather sufficient information to assess the effects of a new proposal, they have no basis for negotiation. Now, there are three things in this bill that I'm concerned about in terms of limiting that ability to gather information, sufficient information. One, of course, the 30-day timeline. And second, I appreciated the question about the complete application. I am personally very concerned about the language in the bill that defines a complete application as meeting requirements of a county ordinance. It seems to me that that could take that decision out of the hands of planning staff and put it into a legal, even potentially legalist interpretation and contention about the ordinance language. Also, I think we know that no ordinance can anticipate everything that could happen, and as has been commented upon, this is a very broad approach. The third item that I was reminded of by one of the citizens last night when he called from Chicago is that the two-thirds vote is a very challenging matter, not for a town board of three, but for a town board of five or larger city. So that is a third way that this could limit that ability to gather information. Also, the additional, of course, time for the moratorium. In Goodhue County, the parcels that have been purchased for potential mining have been purchased at just like 5 acres under the mandatory EAW requirement. And some citizens in Lake Township and Wabasha actually filed a petition under the legislature's new rules. It's gone from a threshold of 25 people signing it to 100 people signing it. Even though it was a small township, they managed to get 100, but like most first-time petitioners, they forgot to put the information on the top of all the pages. So that's another critical avenue for information gathering that can be limited in this situation. So I just want to briefly lay out for you the official timeline that was presented to our planning to our commissioners just yesterday for the Goodhue County moratorium. So we've gotten from March until May for the citizens to actually file a $500 filing fee to request a moratorium. Then the county board, now so we're at June, the county board took up the request in June and sent it to the Planning Advisory Committee. On June 20th, the Planning Commission tabled the request because they needed further review, further information. On July 18th, with a room full of citizens, the Planning Commission voted to deny the moratorium request despite the advice of the county attorney and advised the county board to wait for an application to be filed to react. In August, educational efforts continued, and other cities and townships then sent letters to Goodhue County supporting the moratorium. So that month is how that's how that month was used by the other local governments. And then on September 6th, you know, within the 90-day timeline, but certainly outside 30 days, the county commissioners met in a large courthouse hearing room with over 150 citizens to hear testimony and presentations. The moratorium was passed, and the commissioners appointed a study committee. On October 11th, the study committee was first convened, and in November, the staff began to assemble the request for proposal to be reviewed by the study committee. And in January, on a short timeline, the request for proposal was let, and consultants were interviewed. Meanwhile, a lawsuit had been filed on the land transfer. And on February 21st, just yesterday, the county commissioners were updated by staff, and I've brought both the kind of people's timeline and a copy of the official timeline for Representative Beard's reference. The county commissioners were updated by staff on the timeline and the work plan. It was apparent that the county commissioners felt that it was their duty to make sure that the topics in the work plan were covered, and there was some speculation that they may have to extend the moratorium by 6 months, which they took very seriously, and were informed by the staff that that may not be possible after this legislative session. So we're all concerned about this. Also, I wanted to mention that one of the tools that the planning staff is considering is a development contract, and I'm wondering what the effects of a development contract that's based upon subdivision, you know, a little more about how the subdivision experience might mean when you're talking about long-term reclamation of a mining site. So the purpose of this timeline was to give you just an example of where this might not have worked to allow everyone to weigh in. In our township, at least in our county, the purpose of these procedures is not to stop development. It's to provide for the gathering of the information and involving affected stakeholders. For us, the current statutory timeline works because the county and township meetings are not lined up, and local government is charged with protecting the health welfare of its citizens. That is not a charge that project proposers share. And so while their rights are important, and we certainly take that seriously in our township, this kind of compromise should not compromise the right and ability of local governments to fulfill our responsibilities. Thank you very much to Representative Beard for the work on the bill, and to you, Madam Chair, and the committee for your careful consideration. I hope you'll continue to ensure that township and other local government responsibilities and rights are not harmed, and that citizens and landowners have the tools we need to protect our interests. And that's my testimony. Thank you very
much. Thank you. Do we have any additional questions? Representative Hancock.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Beard. Would you comment a little bit on the two-thirds majority vote?
Certainly.
Representative Beard.
Representative Hansen and members, when something as significant as a zoning law change happens, that has big impacts on people who have been playing by the rules, who have been planning and investing according to a comprehensive plan, according to a set of zoning rules. I believe, and Ms. Dyson can confirm this, it takes a 4-to-1 vote to change a zoning law. And the comp plan, okay, the comp plan, excuse me. I remember when I was on city council, there were a couple of instances that came where people were doing something that wasn't in line with zoning and comprehensive plan, and any zoning changes required a supermajority, a 4-to-1 vote. It's that significant. For the majority of the townships, 2-to-1 meets the two-thirds requirements. My plea to you, my case that I'm making with this, is that if we're going to change the rules after someone's been playing by it, it rises to that level of significance that we need the two-thirds vote. That's my suggestion to you. Thank you for the question. It was part of the notes that I was going to respond to Representative Scalzi. That's the one that slipped my mind for a moment. So thank you for bringing it back.
Are there any other questions? Seeing other questions, would you like to renew your motion?
I will, Madam Chair. Just in concluding comment, let's Representative, if you'd like.
Representative Hornstein?
No, I just wanted to make sure that we had a roll call on the bill's passing.
Roll call has been requested. There will be a roll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple things. The discussion we just heard, the key words in the timeline and the scenario that was painted were there was no application filed. They were putting the one together. Everything that happened on that timeline, if this bill is adopted and become laws, would happen again. Nothing would change in that scenario because the complete application was not made. So the time is there. Once the application is made, as I just responded to Representative Hancock, it rises to that level of significance. And Madam Chair, I know several of us have been getting tons of emails. I just really feel compelled to tell everyone I do not own an interest in a sand mine. I have no interest in anybody who frack drills. I wish I did. I would look forward to my retirement, but I don't. The only piece of real estate and interest I have in this entire state, and indeed in the United States of America, is my house in Shakopee. I'm not in the pocket of big oil. The last 2 years, I think I've received $200 from people even connected to oil interest. I'm grateful for those $200. But as Huey Long used to say, if you can't look them in the eye and take their money and vote no, you don't belong in this business. I assure you I can look the oil companies in the eye and vote no when that's necessary. The last comment, and I'll just share this with all my township and county friends around the state. I want to brag just for a moment about an outfit called Scale. Some of you have heard me talk about Scale before. Scott County Association for Leadership and Effectiveness. Every township, every school district, every city in the county gets together one morning a month, one Friday morning, for donuts and coffee. It's not an official government meeting, but we invite the press, and we talk about stuff. We get to know each other. When the voters elect some new people, we bring them along. Sometimes we even have the old guys that just got thrown out come back because they have such institutional knowledge of the workings of the county and why things are the way they are. It is an enormously effective method of just building interpersonal relationships and trust and skill sets, which is what this business of governing is all about. I would encourage the other 86 counties in this state to come on down for breakfast the second Friday morning of every month at Prior Lake City Hall, see how we do it. See how we have coffee and donuts and learn to actually like each other and get along. Nothing like this takes us in Scott County by surprise. And there's been a lot of interesting things happening in Scott County, including the proposal for a football stadium. Anyhow, members, I just want to close on that note that there is a way to stay in touch with each other. We just get together, have coffee, and do those things. With that, Madam Chair, as amended, I'd like to move House File 389, recommend to pass, move to the General Register.
So moved, but you have triggered another question, Representative Beard. Representative Winkler.
Well, Madam Chair, the real question I had is whether Representative Fiskins ever attends those meetings. But
actually, he does. You'd be pleasantly surprised.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to make a comment that, you know, I think there is a, you know, this is kind of a Goldilocks bill, and I'm not sure that we have it just right yet. I think the issues raised by the two-thirds voting requirement and the public notice involved are legitimate questions that have still been raised, and there's a roll call vote. I'm not going to vote for the bill today. I suspect it will pass, but I do think there is a way to get this just right, and I hope you're still open to working on that.
Noted, Madam Chair, noted. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Beard has renewed his motion that House File 389 be recommended to pass as amended and moved to the General Register. Clerk will take the roll.
Representative Pepin.
Aye.
Representative Murray.
Aye.
Representative Nelson.
Aye.
Representative Beard.
Aye.
Representative Green.
No.
Representative Hancock.
Aye.
Representative Hornstein.
No.
Representative McFarland.
Aye.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Aye.
Representative Simon.
No.
Representative Quam.
Affirmative.
Representative Sanders.
Aye.
Representative Scalzi.
No.
Representative Winkler.
No.
There being 9 ayes and 5 nays, the motion does prevail, and House File 389 is recommended to pass as amended. Thank you. Representative Simon, we have a new face at our table. Perhaps you could introduce us to our new face at our
Absolutely.
Table.
Absolutely. I'm pleased to introduce Bryn House, our new DFL research person here. She was for the last 5 years my LA, so she's I knew I would just be used as a stepping stone, but this is proof. So she's able and capable and great person to get to. So welcome to Bryn.
Welcome to the committee. Thank you. Okay, we'll move on then to House File 1284, the transportation bill. Representative Beard, and if it would be okay, Representative Beard, we'll move your bill, and then if I could have Mr. Shepard perhaps tell us why the transportation bill is in front of us and what sections we need to look at.
Certainly.
Would you like to move your bill?
Madam Chair, I'd like to move House Bill 1284. If staff could remind me where it needs to go next, Ways and Means, and recommend it to pass and move to Ways and Means. Madam Chair, I do have an A7 amendment that needs to be on the bill.
Would it be okay if Mr. Shepard explained the sections we could wish to address first?
Certainly.
Mr. Shepard?
Madam Chair and members, there's a House rule that requires that bills that delegate rulemaking authority be referred to this committee. And page 32, section 39 of the bill delegates authority to adopt rules to administer, to establish fees for driver's license agents for using credit cards or debit transactions. So that is what triggered the mandatory re-referral. The following section of the bill, section 40, references rules, but it doesn't delegate rulemaking authority. Madam Chair, there's one other section that would not have triggered mandatory re-referral, but that might be within the jurisdiction or interest of the committee, and that's section 12 of the bill on page 6, which deals with small business and targeted group contracts entered into by MnDOT.
Thank you. So if we could try to concentrate any questions, since this has been vetted in transportation for those parts. Representative Nelson?
Madam Chair, I see there's an A7 amendment, and I've been asked to move that amendment.
Oh.
That'll put the bill in the shape we'd like to discuss.
Okay. Representative Nelson moves the A7 amendment. Did you want to explain it at all, or should we just...
I will, Madam Chair. Briefly, there is a portion of the bill that needs to be amended. Once we got it through committee, some people pointed out that regarding the MinPass lane language that we put on in the Transportation Committee, it inadvertently picked up the two existing MinPass corridors. Members, each MinPass corridor specifically requires legislative approval to happen. The MnDOT is asking us for 35E, for authority to put a MinPass lane on 35E. We restricted the language that the money in that corridor goes to MnDOT for expenses in expending in that corridor. It inadvertently undid some existing agreements in the 394 corridor and 35W, which wasn't the intention of the committee. So the amendment that Representative Nelson is offering corrects that inadvertent consequence.
Representative Winkler.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Beers, since 394 bisects my legislative district both now and into the future. I wonder if you could just briefly explain what those agreements are and what we're keeping in place.
Cool. Representative Beard.
And if I can phone a friend here.
Or Madam Chair, Representative Beard, if you just tell me, hey, don't worry about it, I'll, I'll accept that.
Representative Winkler, I expect to hear much more of that from you this session.
Terribly
Representative
flattered.
Pepin, then you need to start passing more reasonable legislation.
My legislation is always reasonable. Would you like Mr. Burris to explain?
Mr. Burris can give us the accurate description, but no, you don't need to worry about it.
Madam Chair, we don't need to take committee time. If I just get a thumbs up, it's fine.
Yes.
Well, okay.
It's good.
Okay, Representative Nelson has moved the A7 amendment. Any other discussion for the A7 amendment? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Amendment does prevail. Back to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On page 2 of the... sorry, I'm looking at notes here that my staff gave me. Excuse me. Concerning the bill, there were three pieces that we need to talk through. And one of them was on the portion that Representative Quam talked about, and Representative Carly Moline, I think, had some concerns about cities that have fallen below 5,000. And I thought I had highlighted these in this copy of the bill here. And I'm not seeing it. I must have left my marked up copy laying on my desk. Oh, here it is. Right, I see it. Okay.
Madam Chair, I believe that's on page 10, line 20. Starts on line 24. The municipal state aid transition, I believe.
Here we are. Yes, thank you, Representative Nelson. I appreciate that. The this portion here, what we had was... there were cities that were anticipating fully to be at 5,000 at the census. Didn't quite make it, but the trajectory is such that they're certainly over 5,000 now. And that covers, I believe, five cities, which I don't believe are enumerated here. And I'm sorry I don't have those listed, but it tells MnDOT that they can go ahead and count them in the municipal state aid formula. That's the gist of this. So. With your assent, I think it's good work. Just leave that go.
Any other questions on that? Okay, Representative Beard, continue. Mm-hmm.
The second section, Madam Chair, and I'm sorry, I was had some discussion going on here when Mr. Shepherd was giving these ones that he wanted us to talk to. I see section 12. In section 40, but I missed the other ones. If Mr. Shepherd would give me those again.
Mr. Shepherd?
Madam Chair, the section that required re-referral to this committee was section 39 on page 32.
Representative Beard.
Yes, one of the ones I have highlighted. That'll be debit cards. The first one let's take up is that agents can begin using debit cards. This has been an ongoing thing in the 10 years that that I've been here on why we can't go to the deputy registrar and use a credit card or a debit card to buy our licenses. It has to do with the fee that's collected. This authorizes the commissioner of transportation, I believe it is, the commissioner we're speaking to here over at DVS, to actually put those rules into play that allow a charge above and beyond what the basic charge is for renewing a driver's license or a fee like that, so that we can cover the cost of using the convenience of using a debit card. That's what this is about. Madam Chair, I do have some folks here from DVS who can speak to it or stand for questions, if there are any.
Okay. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Hennepin County's been running into this issue with, there's been a couple big stories about it, that Visa, which does not allow merchants to put on that additional fee, they're not allowed to use a debit card. They could use MasterCard, American Express, other ones that are, but supposedly Visa has in their agreement with the vendors that they can't add that fee on. And there's been some consternation in Hennepin County that Visa cards, which the majority of debit cards are, can't be used for this. Does this solve that problem, or we still have that issue?
Representative Beard?
Madam Chair, for that level of expertise, perhaps you better call on one of the folks from, Ms. McCormick, I see, is still here. Good. And she can speak to that issue. This is one Representative Hornstein championed for a couple years, too, and we're all cheering for him to make this happen, but Representative Nelson raises the sticky wicket we're in with this thing.
Welcome to the committee. Did you get a chance to hear the question? Okay, and if you could just identify yourself for the tape before you begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Pat McCormick, the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services. And this legislation does not change the Visa issue. That issue DVS has requested on several occasions and has written to Visa to discuss why they do allow it for property taxes, but they won't allow it for anything else. And we tried to explain that we believed that this was a similar government tax for registration taxes, and they wrote back that no, they wouldn't allow us to use it. So we can only offer the credit cards that will allow us to charge a convenience fee. As you may remember, the department did a study for the legislature on credit card fees and the costs associated with our transactions, because when you're talking about a motor vehicle sale where you're including sales tax and registration tax, you could be talking about could be up to $10,000, and for us to absorb the fee that would be associated with those kinds of transactions, if a dealer's coming in to do those types of transactions, or if they're coming, customers coming in, the estimates were I don't have it in front of me, but my recollection was anywhere from $22 million up to $40 million would be needed to pay those types of taxes. I can make that available to you, but so we have only been able, this just allows us to be able to require that the deputy or DL agent collect the convenience fee so that the state is not paying those convenience fees. That's what these rules do. We offered rules, and we thought that the legislation that was passed 2 years ago would allow us to include DL agents, because every deputy registrar is a limited driver license agent, but the administrative law judge did not believe that was the case, and they requested that we do additional rules that just involve driver license agents, and so that's what this is, to allow us to do the same rules that we have in place for all deputy registrars for all DL agents, because in some parts of the state we have DL agent offices that are totally separate from our deputy registrar offices.
Any questions? We do have someone from admin, Jody Burr, who wanted to testify to this, I believe.
Oh, Madam Chair, I don't know if Jody wants to, Ms. Berg wants to testify to this portion. There, the next portion I'm going to bring up, I think you want to do driver's license on internet, right?
Oh, okay. Wait a second, then.
Yeah. Well, this is to Representative Nelson's question regarding the fees to cover credit cards. I'm sure that's been covered, and that's why that legislation is in this bill.
Okay. Right?
I'm ready to move on to the last section I think we need to cover then, which is the internet driver education, because it asks the commissioner to include administrative rules, internet-based theory driver education programs, and we're offering that that enabling legislation in this bill as well. That will be some rulemaking on the commissioner to make that work, because currently I don't believe it is legal in this state. We're asking for the option to be extended to parents who are trying to help their kids learn to drive. But I know there is some discussion about that, and I think that is where the next testifier fits into the picture, Madam Chair.
Okay. Welcome to the committee, and if you could just identify yourself for the table.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. For the record, my name is Jody Boer with Education Minnesota, and I'm happy to be in front of this committee. It's a little unusual stop for us. We spoke on this last session, and I've had conversation with Representative Beer, so I appreciate the opportunity to be here. We are here to speak specifically to Section 38 in the bill. It's on page 30 of the bill. It's regarding the online driver's education. And I want to ask you to please stop and pause a minute as you think of this and really consider the individuals that are being impacted by this section of the bill, Madam Chair and committee members. We are talking about 15, 16, and 17-year-olds. These are our kids. And I personally have two children grown now, but so I appreciate this. And the impact and the consequences if they are not properly prepared and out driving on our highways. We are concerned about the quality of instruction that we're talking about in this and the need for a classroom setting for our kids when it comes to learning how to drive a vehicle and for their safety and the safety of others. And there is no replacement for what our kids can learn in a classroom. The interaction that takes place, the ability to ask questions directly of their instructor and interact with other classmates. And so I really ask you to think about, again, the safety of our kids. That is at the heart of it, and the quality of instruction that we're talking about that is necessary for this. Also, I want to remind you, we've talked about this in the past, but the Department of Public Safety 2009 study reported areas that contribute to teen crashes, and they were listed as immaturity, lack of driving experience, high propensity for risk-taking, deficient decision-making, and these are not things that can be addressed online. However, they can be in a classroom with an instructor. In the past, I know that supporters of this bill have cited convenience for a reason for supporting this. And I am asking you today to have safety of our kids trump convenience. There is a place for online learning, Madam Chair and committee members, but teaching our kids to drive is not it. And I want to just close with a couple of personal notes. As I was reviewing the comments and what I would say to you today, last night the news came on, and I listened to the report of the tragic story of the four NDSU students. And it was very surreal for me as I was thinking about coming today to talk to you about this very issue. And it reminded me of why we're here, and that is, can we really be too careful, too cautious when we were talking about teaching our kids to drive? And I would say, no, we can't. And the last story I would like to leave with you that is personal to me, I had two brothers that were killed in vehicle accidents, Madam Chair and committee members. So for me, this is very personal. And I understand convenience. I do. And I stated that there is a place for online learning, but teaching our kids to drive is not the place. So I ask you to please oppose this section of the bill. I'm asking the author, I spoke to him, and I'd like to ask to continue having conversations with him as this bill moves forward and hopefully being able to work with him on a resolution to this. Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. I stand for questions.
Thank you. You do have questions, I think. Representative Simon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, actually, this is my provision in the bill, and Ms. Boer, thanks a lot for your testimony. It's never fun when friends have a disagreement, and that's what we have here. I thank Representative Beard and the members of the Transportation Committee for putting it in here. I just want to remind folks what this bill is and the road that it's traveled, no pun intended, over the last few years. This started out in 2007 and has been vetted over and over and over again by many, many committees, and I think we finally achieved some sort of consensus here. And I just want to remind members what this is and what it isn't. Right now in Minnesota, to get your permit, not to get the actual driver's license, just the permit, just the test about what's the difference between a white line and a yellow line, it's a multiple choice test, which you may remember or your children recently took, just for that portion, not behind the wheel, not licensure, just for the permit, there are two options currently in Minnesota law. You can take it at school, or you can take it at a private driving academy. I took mine at AAA in St. Louis Park. Those are the two options. Many states in the United States have implemented a third, including Texas, California, I believe New York, some of the biggest states. But at any rate, I think it's about a third of the United States has a third option, and it's only an option, and that is a certified online regime for taking only that permit portion, not behind the wheel. Nobody would ever argue that you can learn the physical action of driving a car on the Internet. I would never support that. I don't think anyone here would. But just on the permit test, optioning a third choice, and it's only a choice. Now, the arguments that Ms. Boer has made today about why this is somehow deficient are excellent arguments for why a parent would not choose that option. It's an excellent argument why any of you as parents would say, you know, I want my kid in a classroom. I want him to take it at school, or I want him to take it at AAA or somewhere else. But I would submit that it's not a very good argument as to why it shouldn't be on the menu, as about a third of the United States has it on the menu. We have the language here, which was over the years added, and I think it's appropriate to make sure that any such program, if it were to ever exist, has to pass through the screening of the Department of Public Safety first. Nothing can happen in Minnesota. No fly-by-night operation can come here and offer an Internet program unless it's personally screened and vetted by the Department of Public Safety. And I think that's an important provision of the bill. And so I just want to add, and I'm sensitive to personal experiences, either the testifiers or others. We all have some experience with traffic death or traffic injury. But I just want to emphasize that what this is adding an item to the menu, and parents can choose where they want it, and they may say that this isn't for them or for their family or for their children. But over the course of years since 2007, I think we've reached a consensus of simply adding an option, one that, by the way, has great support in rural areas of our state. You know, in my district, if you're going to drive a kid to driver's ed, it's a couple miles. In other areas of the state, which some of you represent, it's not a couple miles. It's a long, long way. And this offers a convenient option screened by the Department of Public Safety for people to take only the permit test. It's a multiple choice test. What's the white line? What's the yellow line? I don't mean to belittle or minimize it, but that's one example of what's being taught. And all this is an option. So with respect, I ask that we leave it in. I don't think there's a pending amendment or anything, but I understand some of the concerns, but I think we've reached language that we can all feel safe about with our kids. Thanks.
Thank you. Ms. Burr?
Madam Chair, Representative Simon, I appreciate your comments, and yes, it's never fun when we're on opposing sides. Just a last comment, and that is, I understand that you're saying it's just a choice, and so it's an option, and again, you stated convenience. And I would just leave you with, again, I think that safety trumps convenience, and I don't think we should expand a menu to include things that we think may not be safe for our kids. So I appreciate your position on this, and I respectfully have to disagree. Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members.
Thank you. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I want to thank Representative Simon. Even though I know that Xbox and PlayStation have come a long way and it's almost real, I'm reassured that this is just for the written. And I took everything through the high school. My sons didn't really have that options, and we went to private. I know there are a lot of rural districts that don't. But this generation is so used to learning, researching, interacting digitally that I think this option, in some cases, they may pay more attention than they would in a classroom setting. But I support this as an option, and I don't see a problem with that as long as, and it was stated, this is, you know, behind the wheel, the real life is there. It's just the knowledge transference, and I think there's a portion of our younger population that is almost preferring this type of knowledge transference. And I thank Representative Beard and Representative Simon for including this in the bill.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Beard. Are you done presenting all you need
Madam
to present?
I am, Madam Chair. I'm ready to renew my motion, if you'd like.
Well, let's see if there's anybody else that needs to testify to this bill. I do want to make that option available. Okay. Seeing none, I'm not seeing any further member questions. If you'd like to renew your motion, Representative Beard?
Madam Chair, I recommend that House Bill 1284, as amended by this committee, be recommended to pass the Ways and Means.
So move. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion does prevail, and at this time, I'm going to turn the gavel over to Representative Nelson for our final bill of the day.
Representative Dill, welcome to the committee. Do you have somebody to move the bill, or?
Mr. Chairman, I would move House File 2022 be recommended to pass and move to the General Register.
Representative Dill, proceed.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for getting the bill before the committee. This is all about a private land sale. Notwithstanding Section 373.01 requires the county to come forward to the legislature anytime they're disposing of fee land. To give you a quick, brief description of what's happening here, there's a 22-acre parcel that the county owns that has the what is commonly known as the Chris Jensen Nursing Home on it. It is a pre-depression built nursing home that the county has run for quite some time and lost money at it for quite some time. And a few years ago, they found out actually that they weren't very good at running nursing homes from a county perspective. And so they decided to contract out to somebody that they thought that was. That company is a privately held company called Health Dimensions. And they have successfully run this nursing home facility at a profit for several years now under a lease with the county. At this time, the private company would like to make substantial investment, over $9 million in investment in the existing facility to upgrade the services for the nearly 170 guests per day that use the facility, and an additional $16 to $18 million in new facilities on the same property, on the same 22 acres that's proposed to be sold and described in the House File 2022. And create an additional 75 to 85 full FTEs to service new clients, such as assisted living type clients and folks that are in transition between assisted living when they enter, or memory care, or a nursing home setting. And so the company obviously would prefer not to spend the better part, if not all, of $25 million improving buildings and buildings on land that they don't own. So the county would like to sell that to them. They will do that on a direct sale between the county and the folks that now have the buildings and land leased. The county board is united on this to do this. The community has felt the difference in how the nursing home has affected the residents in a positive way, and how that the people in the county in large, which I live in St. Louis County, and I followed the debate continuously over the years of the millions of dollars that were lost by the county trying to run the nursing home. It's been a good thing for the county that we brought that in, and as well by selling the land and the buildings to the private entity By the way, that private entity is not any small-time operation either. I believe they're operating in somewhere in the neighborhood of 15 states, and they know what, you know, they have a good reputation. But that will also put, this action will also put the property back on the tax rolls. So my hats are off to the county. They've done a good job at figuring out how to turn the nursing home situation around. They've done a good job at identifying who could run a nursing home in that setting, and now that group is trying to expand and create additional jobs in St. Louis County. And I have to tell you that on the Iron Range, District 3, 4, 5, and 6, I think we lost around 21,000 people in the last 10 years, census to census. And to get 75 new jobs, full-time FTEs, out of something that the county was losing millions of dollars at over the years is quite a turnaround in my estimation. So I'm asking the committee to support the county moving forward with selling this fee land and doing it as a direct sale to the Health Dimensions Group.
Thank you, Representative Bill. I see a couple testifiers here, Kevin Gray and Tony Mancuso. Do they want to come up and testify for?
Well, I think, Mr. Chairman, I'd prefer if Mr. Gray wants to come up, if we just had, I think I pretty well covered the testimony. If we had questions specific that Mr. Gray could answer, otherwise I'd like to have someone renew the motion and move this to the general register.
Is there any questions of the testifier, of the representative? Anybody else in the audience that wants to speak for or against this bill? Seeing nobody rushing to the microphone, would Representative Murray, would you renew your motion?
Mr. Chairman, I would renew my motion.
Motion is to House File 2022 be passed and be moved to the general register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Bill is passed. Is there anything else? With that, meeting's adjourned.